Hello and welcome to the Soul Refuge Podcast. My name is W.F. White. I am a born-again Bible-believing Christian, and Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Be blessed. Okay, in this part here, I'll be taking a look at the time that Charles Shinneke was defended by Abraham Lincoln. And if you remember how I began the video, I showed you an article from the New York Times when Shinneke died. It mentioned the fact that he was once defended by Abraham Lincoln, so I'll try to give you some of the portions of the book that speak about that. So I believe I mentioned that Shinneke was in a battle with Bishop O'Regan, and this battle eventually ended up in a court. You know, Shinneke had received many reports about stealing and fraud which were being committed by this bishop, and Shinneke confronted him regarding that. Long story short, they ended up in a court, and Shinneke was found innocent on November 13th, 1855. The agent for the Bishop O'Regan, a man by the name of Peter Spink, he requested a retrial, and the court granted that request. So Shinneke was devastated, and as he was leaving the court, there was a man that came up to him and started talking to him, and Shinneke wanted to know the man's name. And let me give you what the book says. It says, "Be kind enough to let me keep my incognito here," he answered. "The only thing I can say is that I am a Catholic like you, and one who, like you, cannot bear any longer the tyranny of our American bishops. With many others, I look to you as our deliverer, and for that reason, I advise you to engage the services of Abraham Lincoln." So here's this man. He chose to remain anonymous, and he made a point of coming up to Shinneke and told him, "Look, you need to get this man by the name of Abraham Lincoln back to the book." "But," I replied, "who is that Abraham Lincoln? I never heard of that man before." He replied, "Abraham Lincoln is the best lawyer and the most honest man we have in Illinois. I went immediately with that stranger to my two lawyers who were in consultation only a few steps from us and asked them if they would have any objections that I should ask the services of Abraham Lincoln to help them to defend me at Urbana. They both answered, 'Oh, if you can secure the services of Abraham Lincoln, by all means, do it. We know him well. He is one of the best lawyers and one of the most honest men we have in our state.' Without losing a minute, I went to the telegraph office with that stranger and telegraphed to Abraham Lincoln to ask him if he would defend my honor and my life, though I was a stranger to him, at the next May term of the court at Urbana. About 20 minutes later, I received the answer, 'Yes, I will defend your honor and your life at the next May term at Urbana, Abraham Lincoln.'" So that's pretty powerful, ladies and gentlemen, how this all took place. So Mr. Shinneke was absolutely devastated that now they wanted to have a retrial, and he had to wait until May of 1856. So that day finally arrived, and, you know, Charles Shinneke got to meet Abraham Lincoln for the first time face to face, and they shook hands. Back to the book. "When pressing my hand, he told me, 'You were mistaken when you telegraphed that you were unknown to me. I know you by reputation as the stern opponent of tyranny of your bishop and the fearless protector of your countrymen in Illinois. I have heard much of you from two priests, and last night your lawyers, Osgood and Paddock, acquainted me with the fact that your bishop employs some of his tools to get rid of you. I hope it will be an easy thing to defeat his projects and protect you against his machinations.'" Well, that's pretty powerful stuff. So this man Abraham Lincoln obviously knew everything that was going on. This was nothing that was hidden. This was obviously in the papers, and Lincoln had been following it. So now he receives this telegraph from Charles Schenige asking Mr. Lincoln to defend him, and Abraham Lincoln was more than happy to defend him. Very powerful stuff. So the trial came, and it says that Abraham Lincoln demolished the testimonies of two perjured Roman Catholic priests, a Mr. Lebel and a Mr. Carthavel. 11 jurors, they found Schenike innocent, but there was one lone juror who happened to be a Roman Catholic. He wanted to condemn Schenike, so the court found it impossible to come up with a unanimous verdict, and the trial would take place once again in October of 1856. So this was an ongoing battle that Mr. Charles Schenike was going through, fighting against the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church. Back to the book. It says, though the world did not suspect it, I knew from the beginning that all my tribulations were coming from my unconquerable attachment and my unfaltering love and respect for the Bible as the root and source of every truth given by God to man. And I felt assured that my God knew it also. That assurance supported my courage in the conflict. Every day my Bible was becoming dearer to me. I was then constantly trying to walk in its marvelous light and divine teaching. I wanted to learn my duties and rights. I like to acknowledge that it was the Bible which gave me the power and wisdom I then so much needed to fearlessly face so many foes. That power and wisdom I felt were not mine. On this very account, my dear Bible enabled me to remain calm in the very lion's den, and it gave me from the very beginning of that terrible conflict the assurance of a final victory. For every time I bathed my soul in its divine light, I heard my merciful Heavenly Father's voice saying, "Fear not, for I am with thee." So we can see, young Charles Schenike, if you remember, he loved reading the Bible. Now, keep in mind that at this point in his life, he is still a Roman Catholic, but it would be the Word of God that would set this man free from that demonic, that diabolical religious system. Keep in mind, this man was a Roman Catholic priest for 25 years, but eventually it would be the truth that set this man free. Glory to God. So anyway, this next trial date, it came, it arrived, and there's that crooked priest named Mr. Lebel. He gave a false testimony. It was filled with lies, and he put on a great show with tears, and he testified for an hour against Charles Schenike. He accused Charles Schenike of doing things that he did not do. And Lincoln, Mr. Abraham Lincoln, was very concerned that the jurors were going to believe this man after that show that he put on, even though he knew that Charles Schenike was totally innocent. Let's go back to the book. The only way to be sure of a favorable verdict tomorrow is that God Almighty would take our part and show your innocence. Go to him and pray, for he alone can save you. Mr. Lincoln was exceedingly solemn when he addressed those words to me, and they went very deep into my soul. So Lincoln, even though he knew that Charles Schenike was innocent, he knew enough about the court system and the testimonies of people and how jurors react. And this perjured priest who was speaking lies and testifying against Charles Schenike, he put on quite a show, and Mr. Lincoln was very concerned. Back to the book. From 11 p.m. to 3 in the morning, I cried to God and raised my supplicating hands to his throne of mercy. But I confess to my confusion, it seemed to me in certain moments that it was useless to pray and to cry. For though innocent, I was doomed to perish. I was in the hands of my enemies. My God had forsaken me. What an awful night I spent. I hope none of my readers will ever know by their own experience the agony of spirit I endured. I had no other expectation than to be forever dishonored and sent to the penitentiary next morning. But God had not forsaken me. He had again heard my cries and was once more to show me his infinite mercy. At 3 o'clock a.m., I heard three knocks at my door. And I quickly went to open it. Who was there? Abraham Lincoln, with a face beaming with joy. I could hardly believe my eyes, but I was not mistaken. It was my noble-hearted friend, the most honest lawyer of Illinois, one of the noblest men heaven has ever given to earth. It was Abraham Lincoln. On seeing me bathed with tears, he exclaimed, "Cheer up, Mr. Shinnecke. I have the perjured priests in my hands. The diabolical plot is all known. And if they do not fly away before the dawn of day, they will surely be lynched. Bless the Lord, you are saved." So it turns out, you know, that wicked priest, the Reverend Mr. LaBelle, here's what happened. He convinced his sister to testify against Charles Shinnecke, you know, after she previously refused to do so because she knew that Shinnecke was innocent. But Mr. LaBelle promised her 160 acres of land if she would testify falsely against Shinnecke. Now, you know, as he was doing this, as he was asking her to do this, she kept saying, "No, this man is innocent. No, he's innocent." But listen to this. At one point in the conversation, he, because he's a priest, he promised to, "Look, I have the power to absolve you of your sins. You know, you come into the confessional booth and I'll forgive you, even for doing this." And she basically said to him, "You can do that?" Can you believe this, folks? We're talking about the confessional booth. So when he assured her that he would forgive her and absolve her, she says, "Okay, I'll do it." Is that unbelievable? This is the Church of Rome. Oh, Lord, have mercy on us all. We need to be speaking out against these false religious systems, folks. So this is what perjured priest, Mr. LaBelle, told his sister. "Mr. Shinnecke will destroy our holy religion and our people if we do not destroy him. If you think that the swearing I ask you to do is a sin, you will come to confess to me and I will pardon it and the absolution I will give you." So that's what he told her. Long story short, that was the plan. But you know what happened? Somebody overheard what took place. There were a couple of different ladies that heard what happened. So what happened after that testimony of that priest in the courtroom, somebody sent a wire to Illinois, and they basically were printing this in a newspaper that Shinnecke would be found guilty. And that's what took place. So it says, listen to this, back to the book. "And the little Irish boys to sell their papers fill the streets with the cries, 'Shinnecke will be hung. Shinnecke will be hung.' The Roman Catholics were so glad to hear that 10,000 extra copies have been sold. Among those who bought those papers was a friend of yours called Terrian, who went to his wife and told her that you were to be condemned. And when the woman heard that, she said, 'It's too bad, for I know Mr. Shinnecke is not guilty.'" So Abraham Lincoln was relating to Shinnecke how this whole thing happened. Somebody overheard what took place. This woman was bedridden, so she couldn't go, but she knew that her friend, who was also there, would be able to go and testify on behalf of Shinnecke, a lady by the name of Philomene MoFat. So that lady saved the day for Mr. Shinicky. So Miss MoFat came into town, and the perjured priest, he couldn't sleep all night. In fact, he started checking the hotels to see if there was a possibility that this woman would arrive and come into town. And the book says he nearly had a heart attack. He even offered to pay her off, but she basically said, no way. And long story short, he went to warn the others. And Mr. Spink, it says, pale as a man condemned to death, rose before the judge. Here's what happened. He went into the courtroom and he knew he had to withdraw the case against Shinicky. So it says, Mr. Spink, pale as a man condemned to death, rose before the judge and said, please, the court allow me to withdraw my prosecution against Mr. Shinicky. I am now persuaded that he is not guilty of the faults brought against him before this tribunal. And long story short, obviously the case was dropped. And you can imagine how happy Mr. Shinicky must have been. So he ended up paying his lawyers. He took care of them. He paid his two regular lawyers $1,000 each. And what happened when he went to pay Mr. Lincoln, basically Mr. Lincoln didn't want to take any money. Back to the book. My dear Mr. Shinicky, I feel proud and honored to have been called to defend you, but I've done it less as a lawyer than as a friend. The money I should receive from you would take away the pleasure I feel at having fought your battle. Your case is unique in my whole practice. I have never met a man so cruelly persecuted as you have been, and who deserves it so little? Your enemies are devils incarnate. The plot they had concocted against you is the most hellish one I ever knew. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And he obviously knew what took place. It says, but the way you have been saved from their hand, the appearance of that young and intelligent Miss MoFat, who was really sent by God in the very hour of need. When I confess it again, I thought everything was nearly lost, is one of the most extraordinary occurrences I ever saw. It makes me remember what I have too often forgotten, and that my mother often told me when young, that our God is a prayer-hearing God. This good thought sown into my young heart by that dear mother's hand was just in my mind when I told you, go and pray, God alone can save you. So, you know, totally, totally incredible. And what happened there when he wanted to know what he owed Mr. Lincoln, and Mr. Lincoln gave him a note, and back to the book, it says, after reading it, I said, dear Mr. Lincoln, this is a joke. It is not possible that you ask only $50 for services which are worth at least $2,000. He then tapped me with the right hand on his shoulders and said, sign that. It is enough. I will pinch some rich man for that and make them pay the rest of the bill. And he laughed outright. When Abraham Lincoln was writing the due bill, the relaxation of the great strain upon my mind and the great kindness of my benefactor and defender in charging me so little for such a service and the terrible presentiment that he would pay with his life what he had done for me caused me to break into sobs and tears. As Mr. Lincoln had finished writing the due bill, he turned round to me and said, Father Shinicky, what are you crying for? Ought you not to be the most happy man alive? You've beaten your enemies and gained the most glorious victory, and you will come out of all your troubles in triumph. Dear Mr. Lincoln, I answered, allow me to tell you that the joy I should naturally feel for such a victory is destroyed in my mind by the fear of what it may cost you. There were then in the crowd not less than 10 or 12 Jesuits from Chicago and St. Louis who came to hear my sentence of condemnation to the penitentiary. But it was on their heads that you have brought the thunders of heaven and earth, nothing can be compared to the expression of their rage against you. When you not only wrenched me from their cruel hands, but you were making the walls of the courthouse tremble under the awful and superhumanly eloquent denunciation of their infamy, diabolical malice, and total want of Christian and human principle in the plot they had formed for my destruction. What troubles my soul just now and draws my tears is that it seems to me that I've read your sentence of death in their bloody eyes. How many other noble victims have already fallen at their feet? He tried to divert my mind at first with a joke. "Sign this," said he. "It will be my warrant of death." But after I had signed, he became more solemn and said, "I know that Jesuits never forget nor forsake, but man must not care how and where he dies, provided he dies at the post of honor and duty." And he left me. Okay, in this section here, I'll be dealing with the plot against Abraham Lincoln. Obviously, you know, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. He was murdered. And Charles Shinneke, in his book, he makes it clear that he believes beyond a shadow of a doubt that Rome was responsible for the death of Abraham Lincoln. The Democratic press, which was then and is still now almost entirely under the control of the Roman Catholics and a devoted tool of the Jesuits, deluged the country with the most fearful denunciations against him. They called him an ape, a stupid brute, a most dangerous lunatic, a bloody monster, a merciless tyrant, etc. In a word, Rome exhausted all her resources of language. She ransacked the English dictionary to find the most suitable expressions to fill the people with contempt, hatred, and horror against him. But it was written in the decrees of God that the honest Abraham Lincoln should be proclaimed President of the United States the 4th of March, 1861. At the end of August, having known from a Roman Catholic priest whom, by the mercy of God, I had persuaded to leave the errors of popery, that there was a plot among them to assassinate the president, I thought it was my duty to go and tell him what I knew, at the same time giving him a new assurance of gratitude for what he had done for me. So, very interesting the way this former Roman Catholic priest, Charles Shinneke, is bringing forth this plot against Abraham Lincoln. Keep in mind that Charles Shinneke was a Roman Catholic priest himself for 25 years. So he knows the ins and outs of that system, and he dealt with that when he was a priest. Back to the book, knowing that I was among those who were waiting in the antechamber, he sent immediately for me and received me with greater cordiality and marks of kindness than I could expect. So Charles Shinneke gets to meet his friend Abraham Lincoln, and now Abraham Lincoln is talking to him from the position of President of the United States. So Lincoln says, "I'm so glad to meet you again," he said. "You see that your friends, the Jesuits, have not yet killed me, but they would have surely done it when I passed through their most devoted city, Baltimore, had I not defeated their plans by passing incognito a few hours before they expected me. We have the proof that the company which had been selected and organized to murder me was led by a rabid Roman Catholic called Byrne. It was almost entirely composed of Roman Catholics. More than that, there were two disguised priests among them to lead and encourage them." This is heavy duty stuff, folks. You probably never heard this before. I would not have known this had I not found it inside the book. What do we learn from this is that Abraham Lincoln knew that he was a marked man without question, and he knew who was involved in the plot against him. By his own words, he used a term Jesuits. He passed incognito because he became aware of this plot against him. Very, very interesting. So Lincoln went on to say, he then added, "I am exceedingly pleased to see you. However, I am so pressed just now by most important affairs that you must excuse me if I ask you to give your place to one of my generals who is there waiting for me. Please come again tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I have a very important question to ask you on a matter which has been constantly before my mind these last few weeks." So Lincoln was obviously very busy. I mean, he's the president of the United States. He couldn't give Charles Shinnecke much time, but he wanted to meet with him. Something was weighing heavy on his heart, and he wanted to meet with him the next day. So the next day, I was there at the appointed hour with my noble friend, who said, "I could not give you more than 10 minutes yesterday, but I will give you 20 today. I want your views about a thing which is exceedingly puzzling to me, and you're the only one to whom I like to speak on that subject. A great number of Democratic papers have been sent to me lately, evidently written by Roman Catholics, publishing that I was born a Roman Catholic and baptized by a priest. They call me a renegade and apostate on account of that, and they heap upon my head mountains of abuse. At first I laughed at that, for it is a lie. Thanks be to God, I have never been a Roman Catholic. No priest of Rome has ever laid his hand on my head. But the persistency of the Romish press to present this falsehood to their readers as a gospel truth must have a meaning. Please tell me as briefly as possible what you think about that." So Shinnecke goes on to say, "My dear President, I answered, it was just this strange story published about you which brought me here yesterday. I wanted to say a word about it, but you were too busy. Let me tell you that I wept as a child when I read that story for the first time, for not only my impression is that it is your sentence of death, but I have from the lips of a converted priest that it is in order to excite the fanaticism of the Roman Catholic murderers, whom they hope to find sooner or later to strike you down. They have invented that false story of your being born in the Church of Rome and of your being baptized by a priest. They want by that to brand your face with the ignominious mark of apostasy. Do not forget that in the Church of Rome, an apostate is an outcast who has no place in society and who has no right to live. The Jesuits want the Roman Catholics to believe that you are a monster, an open enemy of God and of his church, that you are an excommunicated man, for every apostate is ipso facto, by that very fact, excommunicated. My dear President, I must repeat to you here what I said when in Urbana in 1856. My fear is that you will fall under the blows of a Jesuit assassin if you do not pay more attention than you have done till now to protect yourself. My blood chills in my veins when I contemplate the day which may come sooner or later when Rome will add to all her other iniquities the murder of Abraham Lincoln." So Lincoln says, "I will repeat to you what I said at Urbana when for the first time you told me your fears lest I would be assassinated by the Jesuits. Man must not care where and when he will die, provided he dies at the post of honor and duty. But I may add today that I have a presentiment that God will call me to him through the hand of an assassin. Let his will and not mine be done." He then looked at his watch and said, "I'm sorry that the 20 minutes I had consecrated to our interview have almost passed away. I will be forever grateful for the warning words you have addressed to me about the dangers ahead to my life from Rome. I know that they are not imaginary dangers. So, this is incredible stuff. So Lincoln knew that he was a marked man, and he felt that he was going to be assassinated himself. That's what he had, this prompting within his own spirit that that would happen. The book goes on to say, the third and last time I went to pay my respects to the doomed president and to warn him against the impending dangers which I knew were threatening him was on a morning of June 8, 1864, when he was absolutely besieged by people who wanted to see him. After a kind and warm shaking of hands, he said, "Have you read the letter of the Pope to Jeff Davis?" That's Jefferson Davis. "And what do you think of it?" "My dear President," I answered, "it is just that letter which brought me to your presence again. Day before yesterday, I wanted to come and see you from the very day I read it, but I knew you were so overwhelmed with the affairs of your government that I would not be able to see you. However, the anxieties of my mind were so that I determined to go over every barrier to warn you again against the new dangers and plots which I knew would come out from that perfidious letter against your life." So this is referring to a letter that was written by Pope Pius IX to Jefferson Davis, the leader of the Confederates, and he addressed Jefferson Davis as the president. And so Lincoln knew there was trouble. So it says here, Shinnecke goes on to say, "That letter is a poisoned arrow thrown by the Pope at you personally, and it will be more than a miracle if it be not your irrevocable warrant of death. By this letter of the Pope to Jeff Davis, you are not only an apostate, as you were thought before, whom every man had the right to kill, according to the canonical laws of Rome, but you are more vile, criminal, and cruel than the horse thief, the public bandit, and the lawless brigand, robber, and murderer, whom it is a duty to stop and kill when we take them in their acts of blood, and that there is no other way to put an end to their plunders and murders. And my dear President, the meaning I give you of this perfidious letter of the Pope to Jeff Davis is not a fancy imagination on my part. It is the unanimous explanation given me by a great number of the priests of Rome with whom I have had occasion to speak on that subject. In the name of God and in the name of our dear country, which is so much in need of your services, I conjure you to pay more attention to protect your precious life and not continue to expose it as you have done till now." The president listened to my words with breathless attention. He replied, "You confirm me in the views I had taken of the letter of the Pope. Professor Morse is of the same mind with you." Now, who's Professor Morse? Professor Morse is the same Morse that invented the telegraph, the Morse code. So that's who he's talking about. And, Professor Morse, I believe he was in Europe at the time, he became aware of similar talk against the United States and against the president, and that's why Mr. Lincoln spoke those words. The bottom line, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. He was murdered at the Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C. on April 14th, 1865. The man responsible for the murder, a man by the name of John Wilkes Booth. He was an actor, a well-known actor, by the way. He came from a family of actors, and he was very familiar with the Ford's Theater because he did his acting many times in that place, in that theater. So he had access to that theater. He knew the ins and outs, the hallways, the rooms of that place, and it's incredible how this whole thing worked out. And I'm going to speak a little more in detail as I go on. But Shinnecke, in his book, he said, "If I had mixed my tears with those of the grand country of my adoption, I fell on my knees and asked my God to grant me to show to the world what I knew to be the truth, namely that that horrible crime was the work of popery. And after 20 years of constant and most difficult researches, I come fearlessly today before the American people to say and prove that the president, Abraham Lincoln, was assassinated by the priests and the Jesuits of Rome. So think about this. This man, Charles Shinnecke, he was a priest, a Roman Catholic priest for 25 years. So he knew the Roman Catholic system inside out. And yet here he took time. 20 years he did research because he knew what the deal was, but he wanted to make sure. And now he made a statement that beyond a shadow of a doubt, he's telling us that the Jesuits, the priests were responsible, Rome was responsible for the assassination of the President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. He goes on to say, in the book of the testimonies given in the prosecution of the assassin of Lincoln, published by Ben Pittman, and in the two volumes of the trial of John Surratt in 1867, we have the legal and irrefutable proof that the plot of the assassins of Lincoln was matured, if not started, in the house of Mary Surratt, number 561 H Street, Washington, D.C. But who were living in that house and who were visiting that family? The legal answer says the most devoted Catholics in the city. The sworn testimonies show more than that. They show that it was the common rendezvous of the priests of Washington. Several priests swear that they were going there sometimes, and when pressed to answer what they meant by sometimes, they were not sure if it was not once a week or once a month. One of them, less on his guard, swore that he seldom passed before that house without entering, and he said he never passed less than once a week. The devoted Roman Catholic, an apostate from Protestantism called L.J. Whiteman, who was himself living in that house, swears that Father Wiggett was very often in that house, and Father Lehman swears that he was living with Mrs. Surratt in the same house. So there's a picture up there on the screen. That's the actual house that we are talking about. It was used as a boarding house for a season. So Shinnecke goes on to say, what does the presence of so many priests in that house reveal to the world? No man of common sense who knows anything about the priests of Rome can entertain any doubt that not only they knew all that was going on inside those walls, but that they were the advisors, the counselors, the very soul of that infernal plot. Why did Rome keep one of her priests under that roof from morning till night and from night till morning? Why did she send many others almost every day of the week into that dark nest of plotters against the very existence of the great republic and against the life of her president, her principal generals and leading men, if it were not to be the advisors, the rulers, the secret motive power of the infernal plot? No one, if he is not an idiot, will think and say that those priests, who were the personal friends and the father confessors of Booth, John Surratt, Mrs. and Miss Surratt, could be constantly there without knowing what was going on, particularly when we know that every one of those priests was a rabid rebel in heart. Every one of those priests knowing that his infallible Pope had called Jeff Davis his dear son and had taken the Southern Confederacy under his protection, was bound to believe that the most holy thing a man could do was to fight for the Southern cause by destroying those who were its enemies. So, we see that Charles Shinnecke, he didn't hold anything back. He told it like it was. And the bottom line is, he was correct. Mary Surratt, ultimately, she was convicted of the crime. She was subjected to a military tribunal. So that townhouse, and I'll put it on the screen once again for you to see, she operated that townhouse, which she owned from September 1864 to April 1865 as a boarding house during those months there. So that townhouse obviously was in Washington, D.C., and it was at that boarding house that Mary Surratt ultimately met John Wilkes Booth. And he visited that townhouse many times, okay? Another person that was used to testify against Mary Surratt was the man Louis J. Weichman. Okay, now Louis J. Weichman, he became familiar with that boarding house through the son of Mary Surratt, John Surratt. They had gone to a Catholic seminary together, and that's how he came to know John Surratt, and he started staying there, and that is how he became familiar with the people who were involved in a conspiracy against Abraham Lincoln. According to Weichman's testimony at the trial of the conspirators, John Wilkes Booth, David Herold, Louis Paine, and George Atzerodt, John Surratt, and others continually met at Mary Surratt's boarding house prior to the assassination. Louis Paine, also known as Louis Powell. So he testified, Weichman testified, this man, Louis J. Weichman, that on the day President Lincoln was shot, April 14, 1865, he accompanied Mary Surratt to her other property in Surrattsville, now Clinton, Maryland, where she delivered items that Booth later retrieved hours after the assassination. So many parties were involved in this whole plot against Abraham Lincoln. Very, very interesting. On the morning of April 14th, this happened to be Good Friday, Booth went to Ford's Theater to get his meal. While there, he was told by John Ford's brother that President and Mrs. Lincoln would be attending the play Our American Cousin at Ford's Theater that evening, accompanied by General and Mrs. Ulysses Grant. So John Wilkes Booth informed Powell, Herold, and Atzerodt of his intention to kill Lincoln. He assigned Powell to assassinate the Secretary of State, William H. Seward, and Atzerodt to do so to Vice President Andrew Johnson. And Herold would assist in their escape into Virginia. You could find this in the Wikipedia encyclopedia. So ultimately, Powell did not succeed in assassinating the Secretary of State. He injured him severely, but he did not die. Atzerodt did not follow through with the assassination of the Vice President Johnson. Now, Booth, John Wilkes Booth, he had access to all parts of the Ford's Theater because he was an actor, and that's where he acted. So he knew the ins and the outs. He knew the hallways, the rooms of the Ford Theater. He bored a spy hole into the door of the presidential box earlier that day so that he could observe the box's occupants and verify that the president had made it to the play. And so John Wilkes Booth, he slipped into the Lincoln's box that evening around 10 p.m. as the play progressed and shot the president in the back of the head with a caliber, 41 caliber Derringer pistol. Booth's escape was almost thwarted by Major Henry Rathbone, who was in the presidential box with Mary Todd Lincoln. And Booth stabbed Rathbone when the startled officer lunged at him. Rathbone's fiancée, Clara Harris, was also in the box, but was not harmed. So, long story short, Booth escaped. You know, David Herold accompanied him in his escape. They ultimately ended up on a farm in Port Royal, Virginia, the Garrett Farm, where David Herold surrendered, but John Wilkes Booth, he did not surrender, and he was killed ultimately. So another player in the whole thing here was John Surratt Jr. That was the son of Mary Surratt, and he fled to Canada, ultimately to Italy, where he joined the Papal Zouaves. That's the Papal Army. Okay, you can't make this stuff up, folks. So there's a picture up there on the screen of an actual picture of John Surratt Jr. wearing the uniform of the Papal Zouaves. Keep in mind that the Pope at the time was Pope Pius IX, and he's the same Pope, by the way, that came through with that doctrine of the Immaculate Conception regarding Mary. So this Pope, he was all over the place. He was doing all sorts of things. So here we have now Mr. John Surratt in the army that protects the Pope. This had to do with the Papal States and what was going on during that time. But is it not interesting? I mean, this is incredible. Here he is right there in Rome, right there in Italy. Now he's part of that army. And ultimately he was extradited back to the United States. Somebody recognized him, an old friend, and he knew that he was over there, and he was working under the name of John Watson. He was in the 9th company of the Pontifical Zouaves. So, you know, you can see it all fits together, ladies and gentlemen, this plot to kill Abraham Lincoln, who was involved. It's very, very interesting. Ultimately, they found Mr. Surratt. He booked passage to Alexandria, Egypt, arrested there by U.S. officials on November 23rd, 1866, still in his pontifical Zouaves uniform. And he returned to the United States on the USS Swatara to the Washington Navy Yard in early 1867. Now, ultimately, he was not convicted. Shinnecke, in his book, talks about Roman Catholics becoming part of the jury, and that he was assured that he would not be convicted because of that. And he was not convicted, even though there was overwhelming proof, according to Mr. Shinnecke. Later on, Mr. Surratt did preach in 1870. He publicly spoke that he was involved in a kidnapping plot against Abraham Lincoln that failed. But he would not say, he did not admit that he was involved in the murder of Abraham Lincoln. And as we close, the bottom line, how'd this whole thing end? Mary Surratt was hanged along with Lewis Powell, also known as Lewis Payne, David Herold, he's the man that escaped with John Wilkes Booth and surrendered later on, and George Atzerodt. There's an image on the screen there. You could see them being hung right then and there. So this is how the whole plot ended. They ended up paying for their crimes. Mr. John Surratt Jr., as I said, he was not convicted. They were not able to prove the case. And there was a whole bunch of other things involved there. So as we get ready to close, remember that Charles Shinnecke, he declared the Church of Rome, he referred to it as the Monster Church of Rome, and the plottings and what have you that goes on. And you have to ask yourself the question, what does all of this have to do with the gospel of Jesus Christ? He made it very clear, this former Roman Catholic priest, that this is a machine. This is a religious institution, but it's an institution that is corrupt. And that's why he spoke out so clearly, and he was persecuted severely for what he did. They tried to stop the printing of the book. They took the printing plates and destroyed them. He had to start all over, basically, to get that book printed once again. But no matter what this man went through, he still kept pressing on in the Lord Jesus Christ. He never lost his faith. And I encourage you, ladies and gentlemen, if you listened to it, if you made it this far, more than likely you might have just zipped through different parts because of the length of the video, perhaps. But the bottom line is that the Roman Catholic people, they need salvation, just like myself. I am a former Roman Catholic. And this is what Charles Shinnecke tried to get across. He had a heart for souls, and he wanted to expose this system. And earlier in this video, I quoted the statement that he made to the faithful ministers of the gospel, because we are living in a day of extreme compromise where many people have been seduced. I'm going to leave it right there. Be blessed in the Lord Jesus Christ. Christ.